Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. No ads, none of that. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everyone here with us here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And I want to start with the eclipse. The eclipse, it's going to be big news over the next couple weeks. Perhaps it will even eclipse the presidential election. Perhaps. If anything could, please, if anything could. The political distraction of the week in conservative talking head circles, in my opinion, was the question of who responded better to the cop killing in New York. Was it Donald Trump or Joe Biden? Who responded better? Was it Donald Trump or Joe Biden? I don't think either one of them responded appropriately, and we'll probably get to that as we move forward. But let's start with the eclipse. The eclipse is coming up on April 8th. Let me do the math in my head. I think we'll be on the air the day before the big eclipse coming. The eclipse, by the way, I'm not a superstitious person, but I mapped out the eclipse. The very dead center line of the eclipse runs directly over South Buffalo, New York, where I was born. I couldn't get close enough to see if it goes right over the center line of the hospital, perhaps the room in which I was born, at Mercy Hospital in South Buffalo, New York. But it's possible, which means it could mean something to me, possibly, maybe. I do find it interesting that the largest city in the path of totality, both ways, back in 2017 and this year, the largest city in the path, the total path, where the line goes right through the middle line, is Rush Limbaugh's hometown, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Not that I'm superstitious or anything like that. I just want to point that out. Anyway, you're going to be hearing a lot about signs and the skies and omens and whatnot and superstition here as the eclipse approaches. But none will be more ridiculous than this. This is a news story that was on my Yahoo feed, which is the average moron news feed. Mine is tilted toward science, I think, because I'm kind of a science geek. Others would be tilted toward whatever they're interested in. Football, basketball, baseball, pop stars, whatever. Cooking, maybe, if you're into food, yours might be tilted more toward food. But there are certain themes in the average moron feed that are controlled by the popular religious beliefs of the time. For want of a better description, I would call it the postmodernist materialist religion. It's the religion of the criminally insane sex cult that seized civilization back in 2020, and it warps all news toward its particular bent. And this past week, the headline in my news feed said, "Solar eclipse, the result of a fantastic celestial coincidence." It's a coincidence. That's right. The article goes on to say that there will be a spectacular event. And this spectacular event of a total solar eclipse, the author calls it a numerical coincidence. It just so happens that the sun is approximately 400 times larger than the moon and also 400 times more distant from the earth. It's not just a coincidence, according to this article. It's a just so coincidence. And so if you believe that that's coincidental, then you just might believe some of the omens and the superstitious prophetic babbling that you'll hear as we lead up to the next great American eclipse which I'm not going to get to see hardly any of it. But it is going to run directly over my hometown. Everyone else in my family who's living is going to get to see it. And so maybe there'll be some omen against them or for them. Let's hope it's for them. I'm going to vote for it's a good omen for them if it runs right over the room where I was birthed there at Mercy Hospital, South Buffalo, New York. All right. So looking forward to the big eclipse. I won't have to buy the glasses at least, right? Because, okay, so now let's begin on the stories of the week, past and to come. From the DIE file, we have a report on the bridge collapse instigated by the extraordinarily large freighter that just looked so freaky hitting that bridge. It was just bizarre, right? Lights go out, lights come on, puffs of smoke. It seems to turn and wiggle, and it's just looks weird, right? So, well, as best anyone can tell, it was just mechanical failure combined with possibly some human error. But the only thing, well, at least at the time we went to air here at the Weekly Worldview here in the studio, the only facts we knew for sure were who was killed. Well, there are a few facts we know, actually. The Francis Scott Key Bridge was built in 1976. It's named after Francis Scott Key, who wrote the national anthem. But that, now that's a coincidence. That I could believe is a coincidence. What are the odds that the next DIE quota hire was going to, instead of crashing a plane, that they were going to crash a freighter and it would happen to hit a bridge that happened to be named for it? Yeah, that could be a coincidence. And the fact that it was built in 1976, the bicentennial year, which I remember, the fireworks and all of that, right? Now, that's a coincidence. The next series of facts that I'm going to tell you, they're not coincidental. They are emblematic of America circa 2024. And that relates to the people who were killed in this awful accident, as far as we know. As far as we know, it was an accident. We know that these individuals were killed. The two men whose bodies so far have been recovered from the water were identified as workers. They were doing work on the bridge. The one was identified as Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, 35-year-old from Baltimore, a native of Mexico, and Dorlian Ronial Castillo Cabrera, 26, a native of Guatemala. Four other workers are missing from Honduras and El Salvador. And so this is emblematic of America circa 2024. The natives are running ships aground, and the Mexicans are doing all the work. That's just the way it shakes out. And it's a tragedy for the families of the men who were killed, and we're sad. And we pray for the families, these poor guys. The guys actually doing the work. The guys actually getting things done in the country. And unfortunately, their lives are lost in a tragic accident. And it was a bizarre situation to watch that bridge collapse. It kind of reminded me of September 11th, oddly, just weird, because when something so big and so firm just collapses, it's a bit unnerving. I'll put it that way. All right, now from the decline and fall file, we have a report from amgreatness.com regarding the shortage of plumbers. I just talked about the natives are running ships aground. And what are the natives' kids doing? They're going and taking film classes and drama in college and psychoanalysis and business classes. Meanwhile, the plumbing, there's problems with the plumbing. Listen to this. There was a 55% shortfall of plumbers available for work just a couple of years ago, according to a survey. And the author at Am Greatness says that the industry will be short plumbers. Plumbers, I said. That's the guys who keep the plumbing going. Something that the psychology students rarely think about. Who's going to keep the plumbing going? You're not going to be able to counsel the toilet. right? You're not going to be able to counsel the drain or prescribe it Ritalin or Ativan. Somebody's going to have to actually fix the drain and fix the toilet, and we have a shortage of plumbers. The industry will be short by 550,000 tradesmen within 3 years. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but that doesn't sound good. It sounds like getting the plumbing fixed is going to get very expensive, and you're going to have to get in line.
It's already.
And by the way, plumbing is already extraordinarily expensive. So I'm about to undertake a job in a bathroom replacing a tub with a shower unit fixture thing. I'm not sure I'm qualified. Well, I know I'm not qualified. I know I'm not qualified, but I also know that I cannot afford to hire a plumber. And I don't want to get in line. Anyway, plumbing's important. Ask the Romans. As the plumbing goes, so goes the empire. That's right. Oh, by the way, the author says that this can all be traced back to the 1980s when high school counselors developed a mindset that looked at students who could solve a Rubik's Cube and decided they weren't destined for the trades and pushed them toward college instead. Mm-hmm. Right? So the kids who were most apt to be able to handle a wrench and a screwdriver and a hammer and a snake, they end up going to college, taking film, learning psychoanalysis, learning how to code. Okay. The 80s. You know, the 80s was also the time when pop stars were first allowed to appear in public as drag queens. Right? And here we are 30 years later, and transgenderism is now being vomited out by the same cultural forces that pushed the best and the brightest into the institutions of lower learning. And there'll be no sewer to flush the vomit down, wash it away, you know? How are you going to hose off the vomit of the cultural pukers without good plumbing? Well, that's from the Decline and Fall file. Meanwhile, the College Fix is reporting from the Politics file that Republicans are upset. Why are Republicans upset? As usual, they're upset because the Democrats want to take the country straight to hell at 120 miles an hour. The Republicans want to tap the brakes once in a while so that they can make some money. Republicans are upset. Let's see. This week, they say leaders of the Republican Party are skeptical about the Biden administration's plan to hire students to register voters and work at polling places. Skeptical? You're skeptical of that? Maybe this is the problem with the Republicans. Listen to this. The Department of Education has a program called Federal Work Study. Federal work study, and it's funded by Congress, and it's an executive branch. So the executive branch can hand out the money, the Department of Education, and the funds, quote, may be used for employment for civic engagement works. Students may be hired for get out the vote activities, voter registration, and voter assistance at polling places. Okay. Color me skeptical. So the Republicans are the College Fix reports that this plan, and by the way, Biden, I don't know if it was Biden or one of his minions, they made a speech saying, yes, oh, I know, it was Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris slapped a few words together into a pile, signaling the possibility that the administration will be hiring college kids to basically help steal the election. The plan has raised concerns. The College Republican National Chairman, Courtney, the National Chairman, Courtney, that you know, the title chairman implies that the position should be held by a man. That's what chairman implied. That's why we came up with the name chairman, because it should be a man. But there are so few men left, especially in college, that we got Courtney. And Courtney says, paying students to, like, register voters? Well, That might just sound, that might like sound like just encouraging, like civil engagement, you know, but I think it's ripe to be politically weaponized. Weaponized, says Courtney. Mm-hmm. That's right. Courtney says it may be ripe for shenanigans. You know what the problem is, though? One of the problems. This is wrong on so many levels. Starting with the fact that they can't find a man to be in charge of the college Republicans. Why not fold the Republican Party if you can't find a man to be in charge, for crying out loud? It's sad. But another problem is that because everyone has been conditioned to worship democracy, because we've been conditioned to worship democracy, our adversary is using it to cut our throats. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us. I have a story here from the Surveillance State File. This was posted on X this past Monday by someone in law enforcement in the Baltimore area. This is before the crash of the freighter into the bridge. The post on X says, Baltimore is now facing apocalyptic levels of policing shortages. Last week, three police officers patrolled 61,000 residences. And then it went on to describe how police are unable to respond to calls, including for child assault, exclamation point. And so I don't know exactly who posted it or whatever, but you don't have to like point out that they can't answer calls to child assaults when you just said they can't answer calls. I mean, that's just gratuitous, okay? So, but we get the point. You're concerned because we only have three cops to police 61,000 people in Baltimore. Well, listen to me, my friend. We can have a Baltimore where three officers can patrol a district of 61,000 citizens. We could have that within a couple of weeks. You think I'm kidding? We could have that within a couple of weeks. First, we could control the criminals by the fear of God, meaning we could just tell them, look, God is watching you and he's going to judge you on judgment day. You need to not be committing crimes. That would be the first prong of our strategy against crime in Baltimore. The second prong would be to control criminals by fear of punishment. The next few criminals we catch, we're going to punish them so severely and so publicly that all the other criminals will be hiding in the basement for at least a week just trying to figure out what to do. So either one, whether it's by honoring God and warning people that God is watching, or punishing criminals appropriately so that they're terrified to commit crimes, either one of those makes it so criminals won't do it. But in Baltimore, the problem they've had is that they're trying to make it so criminals can't do it. And what happens then? You end up in a police state, living behind barbed wire and armed guards. And then when the armed guards, you can't find enough armed guards anymore, the criminals start winning. So you live in a police state, you're surveilled all the time, and you still get robbed and beaten up. I'm telling you, the first two options at some point in the not too distant future are going to make sense for people. It is going to happen, but a lot of times people have to go through an awful lot of pain in order to in order to realize just common sense. I mean, warn people that God is watching them and then do what God said to do to them when they ignore that fact. And as far as the surveillance state, that's what we need to warn people about. You already live in a surveillance state. God is watching. That's right. And if everybody knew that, and if the state augmented that understanding through acting as a minister of God and administering justice properly, which means if you rob someone, we're going to beat the skin off your back until you're bloody, and then you're going to pay that person back 3 times, 5 times, 7 times, whatever we decide, whatever's appropriate. If you kidnap someone, rape someone, if you hit someone in the head with a rock, we're going to execute you publicly and painfully. Quickly, too. We'll put you on trial. We're going to have a fair trial. We're going to look at all the evidence. If you're convicted, we're going to execute you. If you spray graffiti, we're going to whip all the flesh from the top of your buttocks to your heels off your body. We're going to send you home to your mom and let her bandage you up and let all your friends look at you after they watch the video and then see what they do with their spray paint cans that weekend. All right. If everyone knew that God was watching, the state wouldn't have to watch all the time. We could take it easy. We wouldn't even have to lock our doors in Baltimore. If I'm running for alderman there in Baltimore, I am going to make it so that you can leave your door unlocked all night long in Baltimore. That's vote for me. No, I would never run for office. It's despicable. I won't participate in democracy. I tried. I held my nose. No more. I don't believe in it. All right, now. Let's see. Now, speaking of all of that, we go to the social distortion file where we have a report out of California on PJ Media. They report how the state of California, many large cities are being plagued by hundreds of teens storming malls all over California. Authorities, shop owners, and teens alike aren't quite sure why these unruly gatherings are happening with increased frequency. I wonder why. They say that the signs point to social media. Okay. Well, so what the signs point to is the fact that youthful energy and exuberance is not being properly disciplined and channeled into good. And so if you don't do that with young people, their energy and exuberance, instead of being channeled into good, will be vomited out as evil upon people. Young men need something to do, and it needs to be difficult. And they need to be disciplined and forced to do it. If you don't, and of course, this is in addition to the fact that the young people have no intact family. Their parents get divorced. The kids' lives are ruined. And before you know it, they're running through the mall on a wilding. It's all very sad. We've got a quote from some hapless bureaucrat somewhere in California, probably behind barbed wires with cameras. Issuing a statement, the hapless state bureaucrat said, quote, "We need our partners in the schools, in our places of worship, in our community-based organizations, and at home to come alongside these kids and guide them." Don't mention fathers. Don't say, "Dad, you need to get control of your son." Well, you can't say that anymore because they know for a fact Dad's not home. The government facilitated that situation. They were a part of making that a reality with their no-fault divorce and their legalized pornography and their legalized drugs and all of it. They made it happen. So the last thing they can do is call on Dad. So they want to call on community organizations. Places of worship. We used to call those churches. Now we call them places of worship because nobody knows what they are anymore. Certainly no one in the government knows what a church is. No, don't know what a church is, don't know what a church is for. They know what a place of worship is for. That's where people go to have rallies where they worship the state. It's a place of worship. Well, who's getting worshipped? Well, the bureaucrats don't know. They assume it's them. So you don't call that a church. That's a place of worship. All right. Let's see here. I have one of the malls issued a statement. One of the mall ownership groups. We are establishing a youth supervision policy. Property owners said in a statement in response to all of this. The new policy will require all visitors under 18 to be accompanied at all times after 3 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. All right. Uh-huh. Okay. Unless they're participating in a wilding, during which time authorities, of course, will be incapable of enforcing any policy restricting anything. We just want to be clear what our policy is. And so, once again, to the mall owners and the hapless bureaucrats and the police and the governor of California, all of you, you've got to make it so they won't. You can't make it so they can't. You can't have a three. You have to be accompanied at all times. We're going to make sure if you're under 21, we're going to have to check IDs. And then it's only after 3 o'clock, so we'll have to check the clock. And of course, it's only on Fridays and Saturdays. So some of you drive yourself crazy with that. You tell these kids God is watching you and you are going to face him someday for all that you do. And God has designated me to be in charge of you while you're here. And so before you meet him, you're going to meet me first. And I'm going to cane all the flesh off your backside from the top of your buttocks to your heels. If you're participating in a wilding at the mall, how about that? The problem ends in one weekend. One weekend. All right. Now we go to KTVU, which is a TV station up in Oakland, California, where the news report talks about rules against graffiti. Okay, they say there's always been rules against graffiti. And now it's a TV news story, so when you read it, it's a little difficult. It says, there are rules against graffiti. Enforcing it sometimes causes more trouble than it might be worth. So it should be enforcing them. Rules. But anyway, I'm not going to get into the grammar, because this is television, and we know that everyone in television has a 48 IQ. And the audience, they don't notice. So let's just move on to the meat of the story. Up in Oakland, 102-year-old resident Victor Silva found graffiti on his back fence. Victor Silva, 102 years old, has lived there and paid taxes, they say, for 80 years. Okay, do you have to mention that he paid taxes? I mean, we can assume that if Victor lived in Oakland for 80 years... we can assume that he paid taxes. Why do you have to mention that in the story? You know why? Because the reporters are members of the Postmodern Materialist Church, and they have to mention that he's a taxpayer, because for materialists, citizenship equals church membership. Taxes are the tithe, right? And the primary purpose of existing is to serve the state. See, it's like church, but it's different. So they mentioned that he's a taxpayer in a similar way that if this was a story about a religious guy, they would say that he was a devout, whatever, Methodist or Pentecostal or whatever he was. Anyway, And the reason it's reported this way is because the media and urinalism schools have degenerated to become just arms of the state church. The media is an arm of the state church, and they write in accordance with the doctrine of the church. And so they report that Victor, not only did he live there, he paid his taxes. That's right. He was devout. Well, earlier in the month, now Victor had graffiti on his fence. Earlier in the month... Victor got a violation citation from the city ordering him to remove it by the 19th of March or face a $1,100 fine. Face an $1,100 fine. And so when the fine came due, the news noticed and everybody's outraged that they're fining a 102-year-old guy in a wheelchair $1,100 for not cleaning the graffiti off his fence. His daughter-in-law, Elena, says, I don't know what to say. Really, Elena? You're his daughter-in-law. You don't know what to say? How about tell your husband to clean the graffiti off his dad's fence, for crying out loud? don't know what to say. You don't have to say anything. How about kick your husband in the backside and get him cleaning up the fence? All right. Now, listen to this. In his younger years, Victor Silva painted over the graffiti himself. He's had to fix the problem himself for probably 50 years, for crying out loud. Anyway, it's an embarrassing story. And, of course, now that it's come out, someone's going to help this guy. I'd drive up there and help him myself if I could. Drive down there, drive over there, take a plane, try to help him out. Oakland?
They don't even have Burger King.
Oh, they don't even have Burger Kings
no,
there?
I mean, Burger King, In-N-Out.
Oh, that's right, In-N-Out. Well, maybe not Burger King's either by now.
Oh, yeah.
It's just In-N-Out was the first one to close. So anyway, I'd drive there, though, because I'd want to take a gun. I wouldn't take a plane there. But anyway, someone's going to help this guy out. But this is just the state being caught in an embarrassing situation. Oh, we were going to find this guy. What you don't know is there are 5,000 other guys just like this that the government will do exactly this to, and nobody's going to know the story. Because this is the way it is to live in Oakland. Anyway, it's easy. They said in the article, by the way, at the beginning, that enforcing the laws against graffiti, they called them rules. I don't know if there's rules against graffiti. I think there's laws. I think there's laws against defacing property. That's all. Anyway, they say they're hard to enforce. It's easy to enforce. It's easy to enforce. You devote an enormous amount of time and effort for about one weekend to catching graffiti artists. And then you whip all the flesh from the top of their buttocks to their heels off their body, and then you make them clean up the graffiti, and then you make them pay the property owner three times restitution. And then within about three weekends, you might have three public whippings, and the graffiti and the whippings come to an end. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. I think that intro is what it sounds like when the flesh starts coming off the the graffiti artists. That's kind of what it sounds like. They make sounds similar to that.
I never heard. All right.
Now let's return to the program from the Social Distortion File. The Verge reports that Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, has signed into law a law that will give parents more control over their kids' social media.
Wait, he's a taxpayer, too.
He's a taxpayer, by the way. Devout. Well, he's one of the priests, I think. So.
Okay.
But he paid his taxes the whole time. Now he's exempt, of course, because he's a part of the higher religious order. Which I believe requires a Juris Doctorate, and that's about it after that. Now, the new law will give parents more control over their kids' social media, meaning parents have utterly failed. Why? Because of the church. And the aforementioned fact that the dominant religion in the culture is the worship of the state. And so, well, we'll get to that. Let me get to more details from the story. The law requires, listen to this. The law requires social media platforms to require parental consent for kids to create social media accounts. Companies that fail to comply can be sued by the parents of the kids and may be liable for up to $10,000 in damages. And if they're judged to have done it knowingly and recklessly, they could face up to $50,000 in civil penalties per violation. So, down in Florida, in place of child rearing, the top lawyer in the state, who happens to be the governor, creates regulations that will make parents feel better and probably vote for him, but it will not they will not solve the problem, but will create another revenue stream for lawyers. That because the social media platform company can be sued for civil penalties. There you go. And the hapless parents, they go ahead and vote for the senior lawyer in the state of California. Did I say California? I meant Florida. The hapless parents will vote for him because they mistakenly think he can protect their kids, when actually it's up to them to protect their kids. And a parent shouldn't have to sue anyone over the fact that their child opened a social media account without their permission. Number one, the parent should have disciplined the child appropriately. The child just wouldn't do that. A child would be too frightened of the kind of trouble they get in with their parents. I mean, I would love to say that, well, the child should respect and love their parents so much that they would never do that. And that would be wonderful. But let's just say that's not possible with all kids. Let's just say there might be a few. So the kid should be so terrified of what mom and dad would do if they found out I had a TikTok account and they didn't know it. The kid won't do it. But that's not allowed in the church doesn't allow that. I have to make up a name for the new church. I'll try to think of that as I go through. Oh, I could call it the Church of the Poison Mind. Since I talked about the 80s being the time when, what did I call them? What are they called? Drag queens, right? Drag queens. I have a mental block against drag queens. Try to block them out. In the 80s, a drag queen was allowed to have the number one album in the world and be the most popular singer in the world. I remember saying, how is this fag the number one thing in the world? It's disgusting. With the eyeshadow and the whole thing. So the Church of the Poison Mind. We'll go with that, okay? So that at least that drug-addled freak contributed something to society because he gave us a name for the church. Thank you very much. So from there, from Florida, we do go to California. This is why I was confused. Because it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between the lawyer running that place and the lawyer running this place over here. And then you got some lawyers down here, and they say this is the one is blue and this one is red, and they're all going straight to hell in a handbasket. And you wonder, what are these people talking about? So let's go to the Devil's Workshop file, where in Sacramento, California, the city council there has declared Sacramento a sanctuary city for people who identify as transgender.
It wasn't already?
No, apparently it wasn't. It had not been declared as such. Now it has. And the city council was sensitive enough to know that they're not able to actually declare that transgender is even a thing. They're just recognizing people who identify as transgender. Just we don't want to offend anyone who might not be transgender or think. We don't even say you have to be transgender. We don't even say there's such a thing as transgender. But if you identify as transgender, you're welcome here, is what we're trying to say. Unless you don't want to be welcome. So that's the capital city of the most populous state in the country and probably the largest concentration of worldly wealth and influence in the world is the state of California, and that's the state of the capital. And here's the thing. How is it that the city council in Sacramento has time to issue a declaration about anything having anything at all to do with anything to do with this? How is that? Well, here's the thing. Our forefathers worked so hard and did such a great job that they left us a civilization wherein even the relatively stupid and lazy can achieve incredible amounts of power and wealth and do relatively little work. And if you look around yourself, look around in the professional world and you'll see it everywhere. People who three generations ago would have starved to death for their lack of skill and work ethic and intelligence, they would have been beggars in the streets and their vice presidents today because of what our forefathers did. And they've left us this. And now because the governing officials, they've been allowed to ignore their primary responsibilities, which are so mundane, by the way. What is it to be in the government, right? You keep the roads paved, you keep the water flowing. How hard is that? So 10% of the people in the government right now should actually have a full-time job in government. Maybe 10%, seriously. I mean, keeping the roads paved, keep the courthouse running, policing the streets. It should be, at best, a part-time job for 0.1% of the population should be in the government. But instead, the bureaucratic state, if I'm not mistaken, in California, it's 30% of the economy. 30% of the workforce either works for the government or relies on government contracts. And when you have that much, that big of a bloated, top-heavy, fat, idle hands are the devil's workshop. And so you got a bunch of devout religious people there in the city council's office, the student council there in Sacramento. And they're not keeping the potholes filled, and they're not keeping the water running, and they're not keeping the infrastructure up. So we're running on the fumes, by the way, that our forefathers handed us. I mean, the fumes were so strong that even the relatively stupid and lazy could be pretty successful with relatively little effort. But the minions there of the royal priesthood of the Church of the Poison Mind, which they may be headquartered in Sacramento, they are going to squander even the fumes that are left. And I will say that the collapsing of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, built in 1976, it may not be a conspiracy, it may not be an enemy attack, but it is quite ironic and coincidental. There are some interesting coincidences and ironies associated with the fact, and I can't wait to find out who exactly was responsible and how exactly it is that will all be interesting, and I'm sure it will have other ironies and it will have other dark coincidences. But whatever grist we can make of it, it's of no help to the families of the men who were killed, which that's truly the tragedy of it all. Hope they knew the Lord. That's all I can say. Okay, from there we go to the bad religion and politics file. Bad religion and politics. That's doubly bad. And for that, we go to issuesandinsights.com, where the headline talks about book banning. So leftists say that conservatives who want to keep the dirtiest of the dirty books out of the schools, at least out of the third grade. Fourth grade? Well, where do we draw the line? Let's say third grade. Should we not have pornography for the third graders? If you're a conservative, you want to draw the line somewhere. And so the leftist media calls you a book banner if you want to keep pornography out of the hands of the third graders. And the author of the story recites a number of recent news stories about dirty books in the schools and parents' efforts to do something about it. And then the author over at issuesandinsights.com says what is at the heart of these book bans is a moral disconnect between the majority of Americans and the education establishment. While the majority believe that obscene material has no place in school, the education establishment believes that it is necessary. The author says, this disregard for the beliefs of the wider community has caused this tension that results in conservatives being called book banners. And so to the author over at Issues and Insights, I just want to say that you are a victim of the worship of democracy. One of the sacraments of the church of the poison mind is you have to worship democracy. And even people who think they're conservative worship democracy. They worship democracy so much that they subconsciously believe that the problem is that the education establishment is going against the majority and the beliefs of the wider community. And so they're going to defend keeping dirty books out of school based on the fact that most of us don't want dirty books in school. Well, listen, that's the wrong hill to fight on. You're defending the wrong hill. And so even if you get killed, you're defending the wrong hill. We don't want dirty books in the schools because there shouldn't be dirty books. That's all. Not for the parents, not for the teachers, not for the kids, not for anybody. So anyway, and then this guy's on our side. The guy writing the story, he's on our side. And he doesn't even realize. He doesn't realize how compromised his own worldview is. This is why we're losing, by the way. All right, now, the author goes on, it is not about censorship or restricting the free exchange of ideas. I worship the free exchange of ideas. So you can't be afraid to say, yes, this is about censorship and restricting the exchange, the free exchange of ideas, because you can't have the free exchange of criminal ideas and pictures and dirty books. That's all. It's criminal. And so, yeah, we're going to restrict that. We're going to censor that. Not going to have it. But he doesn't realize that. He says this is about preserving innocence. Yes. Now there's a point where we agree. Absolutely. This is about preserving innocence. Yes, sir. Yes, it is. And which means punishing and preventing criminal behavior. The problem is, sir, if you're not willing to say it's criminal, then you can't stop it. And that's where you, sir, the author here at issuesandinsights.org, who I appreciate the fact that he at least wants the dirty books out of third grade. At least we have a point of agreement. And he believes that preserving innocence is important. But if you're not willing to call it criminal, then you can't stop it. And you can say that, oh, we're going to put an age limit. We're going to 7th grade, 12th grade, 3rd grade. No, you can't stop it because you won't say it's criminal. So you've already lost. You're going to die on a hill after having lost the war. All right. Now he goes on to say, we must not allow ourselves to be swayed by misleading narratives and manipulative language. Now, I know he's talking about them saying we want to ban books. But, sir, you've already been swayed by misleading narratives and manipulative language. You worship the idea of the majority and the beliefs of the wider community. And we can't restrict the free exchange of ideas. You worship all these false tenets of your false... Well, I'm not going to say you're probably not a tithing member of the Church of the Poison Mind. You're just influenced by the prevailing religious environment that you've been raised in, and it's unfortunate. And I think this is most Republicans and most evangelicals are like this guy. They got their MAGA hat. They got their American flag with a blue stripe, they think. All right. This guy's name is Craig DeLuze. He's running for Congress up there in California. I read his bio. No mention of being a Christian in his bio. Why? Because that might not help him get elected. No mention of... He mentions the border and taxes, damn it. That's basically his bio. He's the product of 50 years of lawyers telling Christians we can win, but not with God. Right? And now, God says without him, we cannot win. Mm-hmm. Who do you believe? It's the Weekly Worldview. Yes. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Oh, he also mentions homelessness, solving homelessness, in addition to guns, taxes, and border.
Homelessness.
They don't have less home. They don't have a home. Well, I guess if you're living in a tent, that's less home. So under a cardboard, that's even less.
Taxlessness.
That's easy for that. Taxlessness. All right. Now we go to the, I'm not even sure what to call this. I referred earlier to the murder of a New York City police officer. Breitbart reports that the founder of Barstool Sports, who I will not name because I don't like the guy. The founder of Barstool Sports has raised $1.5 million for the family of slain New York police officer Jonathan Diller. The founder of Barstool Sports also pledged to match the donations and issued a statement. He issued a statement saying, quote, thanks to everybody who donated, we raised $750,000. With the matching of funds, that brings the total to $1.5 million that will go directly to the family. Unquote. It's like, did you have to mention this going directly to the family? We kind of had assumed that. Why would you mention that, by the way, since we all assume that already, Mr. Barstool? Now, does anyone else find this unseemly? And I'm not sure what to call it, but at the very least, gauche, tacky. I don't know, to publicly raise money and then publicly declare the amount and then mention that it's going straight to the family, directly straight to the family. I don't know. It's just yucky. I don't know. This guy, this Barstool guy, he's yucky. Something about him. And by the way, since when is giving someone who just lost a loved one a large amount of money... Since when is that even appropriate? I mean, whenever that became appropriate, that was inappropriate. That's all I'm going to say, okay? So, I mean, if Mr. Barstool ever raises money for me, I'm just going to suggest that he keep it and just spend it on drinks and gambling, okay? As long as 100% of it goes straight to the bookie and the bartender. Not that I'm going to check you out on that, because, I mean, I can assume that. Just unseemly, that's all. Another headline related to the story, by the way. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation, big headline, pays off the Diller family mortgage after Trump donation. And so the executives, I don't know who it is. What do you call these people at the Tunnel to Towers, huh? Been making a living off the people who died at the Twin Towers for 20 years. I mean, so they whoever they are, and Donald Trump, they all get up and talk about how much money they're giving the family of the... Anyway, so, and I'm sure, and I haven't watched the video, I haven't read all their statements, but I'm sure every single one of them also, except the Barstool guy, all of them said that we also offer our prayers, and I'm sure... They gave lip service to the whole prayers thing. But nobody can just say we're going to pray for the family and then just leave it at that? How about that? No, they don't even know how to pray. They don't know who they're praying to. They don't worship God. They worship money. So prayer without a donation in their church is like faith without works. As far as they know, it's dead. You got to give the money. And then you got to post up on X. Let everybody know how much money you raised. Anyway, that just all seems very unseemly to me. If I was the wife and the mother and the father and the brother, I would just feel like, what? What am I? I don't know. Am I like a parade balloon that you're going to put up in front of your parade here as you march off to the election or to your trying to get clicks on your website? Is that what I am? My husband, my brother's been murdered. I don't know. It just seems very, very unseemly. I wouldn't participate, frankly. All right. Now, and then listen to this. A report about the killing of the police officer, Jonathan Diller. Traffic stop. Makes a traffic stop. The guy shoots him for no apparent reason other than, I don't know. It's very disturbing that this happens anymore. More and more and more it happens. Listen to the report about the killing in a newspaper. Guy Rivera, 34, who was wounded in the deadly exchange that killed police officer Jonathan Diller, was arraigned on charges of murder. He was wounded in the deadly exchange that killed. Well, then why was Guy Rivera charged with murder? Why wasn't the deadly exchange charged? I mean, the sentence says the deadly exchange killed police officer Jonathan Diller. So anyway, this I haven't read all the reports, but I'm going to guess that this guy Rivera, who killed this cop, should have already been dead for some other crime that he committed sometime in the last, how old is he, 34? Sometime in the last 10 years, this guy has already committed at least one crime and been caught, for which he should have been executed. All right, but the cop was not killed by an exchange. What does that even mean? An exchange that killed the police officer. An exchange of what? Oh, an exchange of gunfire, was it? So was it an exchange that killed the cop, or was it the gunfire? Or maybe it was a guy who killed. Maybe it was Guy Rivera who killed him. Maybe it was a guy. But by then, the average reader, they've already moved on to the next story or the next video game, or the next sports event, or the next text they got, or the email, or whatever. I mean, that's if the average reader is lucky enough not to be the next guy getting shot or stabbed or beaten or robbed. Very, very sad. Very sad. And disturbing and on so many different levels. Okay, now speaking of disturbing on so many levels, I got this story twice. The story I'm about to go into, I got it on my Yahoo feed, my Average Moron feed. And I also got this on a Google feed when I use my phone instead of my normal Google, which doesn't have any. Sometimes when I use my phone on that browser, I get the ads, right? So, and or the news feed with the ads on the side. And I got this story and I noticed it twice. And so I clicked it. And the headline is a patchwork family. And it's more words than that, but I cut out patchwork family because that's the crux of it. So this is a story from a lady in England, Ms. Lily Dunn. Her byline says she's a British writer and academic. A British writer and academic. Yeah. What's an academic? I don't know. I don't know what that is. That means she does something at the university. I think that's the equivalent of a nun in the Church of the Poison Mind. I would call her also an extremely accurate social barometer, and I'll tell you why as we get into her. I don't know what you would call this. It's not really an op-ed piece, not an opinion piece on anything political. It's just her vomiting out details about her life so that other people won't feel so bad about themselves, is what I'm convinced of. So it's an article about her patchwork family, and she says, after my marriage failed, I strove to create a new family, one made beautiful by the loving way it's stitched together. So when you read that first sentence, you're thinking, oh, her marriage failed. That's so sad. What happened? Her marriage failed, she says. She goes on to say, I was married to a good man with two young children, 7 and 9. When I was struck by true love for someone else, I simply wanted to be near him. I did not want to destroy my family, but I did not want to live the rest of my life wondering what might have been. So I left my good enough marriage in the hopes of creating something better. So the fact that she can even say that in public is a sign of the times. And by the way, throughout the rest of the article, well, I'll just read it to you, okay? Because she goes on. She's obviously a communist. Because she says, in the West, we look at the nuclear family as the ideal. And then blah, blah, blah. She goes on for a paragraph and a half about how women have been and men have been the patriarchy. All the communist atheist jargon that you would expect. And she ends the section on her social commentary. In my second attempt to create a family, if my second attempt to create a family has a fighting chance of defining itself, it must be set free. It must be set free. Says Ms. Lily Dunn. This is just an article that people get in their feed.
Okay.
It's about a patchwork family, okay? And now she goes on to say, so she left her husband. Why? Because she got all warm and fuzzy about some other guy. She had a couple of drinks, met this guy, left her husband.
Another woman.
No, it wasn't another woman. It's not that. That'll be next week, for crying out loud. So this woman doesn't feel so bad about herself. She'll read about someone who left for another woman. But listen to this. She talks about her kids. She says her kids had to come to terms with the explosion in their lives of her new husband, who she says was, quote, the result of a decision I'd made for myself. The weight of my choice and the power to change the course of my children's lives was paralyzing to them. I wondered if this selfish act would be a curse. She then describes how everything affected her for like 6 paragraphs. She goes on about herself. And she does mention the boyfriend and the kids once in a while, but it's 6 paragraphs about how all this affected her and her personal psyche, her happiness, her joy, and how it helped her learn how to demonstrate her flowery writing skills. And then toward the end, she says, I know it was right to take the path untrodden. Now, the whole time you're reading the article, if you're a normal person, you're waiting for her to say, then I realized how horrible I was and selfish and what a horrible person I was. And I apologized to my kids and everyone else. I got down on my knees and I begged God for forgiveness. No, there's none of that. She says, I know it was the right path. I know it was right to take the path untrodden, even if I regret the pain it caused. Wanting more for myself and not wanting to compromise feels like the right path for me now. But, and you're waiting, you're like, okay, this is it. And then she says, but also the right example to my children. I have a deep sense of responsibility. I have a deep sense of the responsibility of my actions, like a psychic wound that might never fully heal. And that's it. There's no repentance. There's no regrets. There's no...
Wow, I'm sorry you had to read it.
It was painful. I read the whole thing, too.
Oh, my gosh.
It was 4,000 words. And that wasn't the end of the article, because the article ends on a much happier fake note, a fake happy note, as if everything's going to be...
You know what? It might be fake whole thing.
The whole thing could be AI generated. Lily Dunn might not even exist for all I know, right? I'll have to check this out. That would be embarrassing to find out that I got duped by AI. Especially after I said I could spot AI. So anyway, if Lily Dunn does exist, and I'm going to have to investigate now that my extremely attractive audio engineer, pointed out the fact that nobody would actually write this. Come on. I mean, society might be halfway to hell in a handbasket, but nobody could get away with this. This has to be AI. All right. Well, if she does exist, we're going to check. We're going to keep tabs on her. I'm going to put a Google alert on her name. Keep track of her and her kids for the next 10 or 20 years. And let's just see how right it was, the decision she made. And by the way, let's see how right it was in this life, Ms. Lily Dunn. And then let's see on Judgment Day. I certainly hope if Miss Lily Dunn does exist, I hope she doesn't exist, frankly, for the sake of her two children, for the sake of her two fake AI children. I hope she doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But if she does exist, I hope she repents before Judgment Day, because boy, is that article going to go down badly. That's going to be a tough one to. Ooh, yeah. Can you imagine having God reading you that article while you're. And your two kids standing there. Oh, man, that's going to be rough. Okay, meanwhile, let's see here. We've got a story from the Sad Religion File. We're almost to the end here. We should be at the end. We're probably past the end. But this is an AI. It doesn't end on time. It ends whenever I decide, and I'm not artificial. I may not be all that intelligent, but I'm also not artificial.
Sorry. I think I put wrong thing.
That's all right. That's another example of how this is not AI. That was a mistaken musical interlude that almost got started there, because none of this is fake. This is all one take, right? Okay, down in Arizona, we have a story from BehindTheBlack.com where the headline says, a city in Arizona has shut down a church program that fed the hungry for at least 25 years. So this story is Sad Religion File because it's wrong on so many levels. First of all, the Bible says feed the poor as a personal act in a specific situation, not as a career. Or you're not supposed to create an industry of dependence by perpetually feeding the poor. It's when you come across someone who's poor, instead of ignoring them, feed them. But don't create an industry. Anyway, okay, so it's wrong on that level. So the church in Arizona that's been feeding the poor for 25 years, they're on the wrong track. You could say their heart's in the wrong place, but their head's in the wrong book, and they're listening to the wrong preacher, and they're utterly confused about how to live the Christian life. You don't create an industry feeding bums. That's okay. But the article goes on. In 2022, a new mayor arrived in San Luis, Arizona, and thereafter, the food program at Gethsemane Baptist Church came under harassment. Repeated citations were issued, bureaucratic demands were made, and finally, there were threats of fines of more than $4,000 and the threat of a potential jail term for the pastor that forced him to shut down the program. So this is the second level where it's wrong. Any pastor who's not willing to go to jail for his ministry is not worthy of being a pastor. I mean, even if you're not 100% solid on all the theological points about feeding the poor, if you've decided that the Lord has called you to feed the poor, and the government comes in and says, we're going to throw you in jail for feeding the poor, you say, let's go to jail. Or you resign as a pastor because you're not fit to be a pastor. The new mayor down there looks like a lesbian high priest in the Church of the Poison Mind, Nieves Raidel. She's been harassing and sending inspectors out every time a truck arrives at the church, every time a loaf of bread appears, a city inspector shows up and issues a citation. And the parishioners say that because the city and Mayor Raidel and their intimidation tactics, the church cannot feed the hungry. That means, now according to the author here at BehindTheBlack.com, the author says, that means people are going hungry right now. And so I don't know where you live, Mr. BehindTheBlack.com, but nobody's going hungry right now because Pastor Castro there isn't handing out food. Trust me, the communist mayor there in San Luis, Arizona, she has plenty of government cheese for that. If the church stops feeding the homeless, she'll be right there. Trust me, nobody's going hungry. Okay, and then finally, the article concludes, the pastor has enlisted the legal services of the nonprofit firm First Liberty. Nonprofit. They want got to get that in there so that you're all aware that nobody's interested in making a profit, especially the lawyers at First Liberty. That would never be on their mind. They're a nonprofit group. So Pastor Jose, in addition to being a theological lightweight, he will now be compromised by the lawyers who will abandon God in favor of a defense based on religious liberty. And one more already weak and confused ministry will be swallowed by the beast that is the Church of the Poison Mind. And that's just sad, but we won't go here at the Weekly Worldview. And we're glad you're with us. And that's it for the show this week. I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio. And should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.